This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com and your host, an author of astonvilla.wtf. Subscribe.
Oh, you've added that.
Subscribe immediately. It's an essential addition to your email inbox. That's all I can say. Facts months before anybody else delivers them. Right, here we are. We are gathered here today, myself, Mr. Chris Budd, and Phil Shaw, to honour the third time he's done it. Equaled his record, Mr. Steven Gerrard. Congratulations. You have equaled your longest unbeaten run, 3 games. An outstanding achievement, Chris Budd.
We're Aston Villa. We set the bar low.
Chris Budd.
Good evening.
We are here to worship Gerrard, not belittle his achievements.
Be sarky, bastards.
I'm not being sarky. I wanted to be unbeaten after 3 games.
I want to be unbeaten
before this game, and he's achieved that. So pipe down, Bud.
Okay.
It's an away point. What's your problem?
The first of the season. Yeah, first away point of the season.
It's got to be the first time we've had consecutive clean sheets in a while.
Yeah, so what's your problem? I don't understand people's problem. Leeds can't beat us on their patch. It's, what is it? They've won once in the last 11 games now at Elland Road against Villa. Astonishing achievement from Gerrard. Oh, sorry, that's Julio, isn't it? Gerrard. Right, we will get into the nitty-gritty of the nil-nil. I did actually say the Pulls panel result. I went for score draw, didn't I?
You did.
Missed out there. But I wasn't optimistic as you were predicting an away win. But
I was predicting the way it should have gone.
Your heart was in the right place. That's what I'll say. Your brain still hasn't worked out who you support.
I know,
Who you're dealing with here.
It's this cautious optimism that will be the death of me.
Yeah, well, we live and learn. Forrest, what are you going for?
Oh, God. Give me a few days to deliberate.
Well, we'll cover that in the Something for the Weekend before the Forest game. Coming up in the show, we'll get into all the Villa news. If you were subscribed to astonvilla.wtf, you'd already know what some of the things we're going to be talking about. Before getting into the 3 points, a bit more serious this time. There's no kind of wild card, wacky one in this 3-point offering. Before seeing what Phil Shaw's dug up in the Media Muppets, I never check what Phil Shaw's dug up in the Media Muppets, so that is a bit of a wild card.
It's
a bit of a loophole in the show. I must kind of close that off with a bit of research, maybe, on my part. Before we get back into what went down at Elland Road. Right, it's news time, I think, to get things going. Are we talking about World War III yet?
Can we not?
Hasn't that officially started? Is that officially started yet?
No, but that's going to be its own podcast, isn't it?
So. Well, yeah. I think it's time for some Villa news. Right, first off in the Villa news, the second officer involved in the death of Dalian Atkinson. You may remember there was a female and male police person. They were actually in a relationship at the time, but Mary Ellen Beckley Smith was found not guilty of assaulting Atkinson. Despite hitting him with a baton, her partner Benjamin Monk was jailed in 2021 for manslaughter. By the time you listen to this, myself within the fan consultation group will have seen the, I think at the moment, the builders, the final designs of the new club crest before they go out to the supporter base for a vote, actually. So it'd be interesting to see if there's any amendments needed before it goes to that vote. All I hope for is how many there is. If there's four, there's five, they're all like proper contenders, and it's not like there's only one you can choose from because the rest are crap, if you know what I mean.
You're hoping for a lot.
Yes. I was cautiously optimistic after the first meeting, as I've written elsewhere. But the second meeting, a few alarm bells, but never mind. Moving on, if you have already subscribed to AstonVilla.wtf, you already know what I'm about to say. If you haven't, get to it. Frictionless kiosk. Chris Budd can't wait.
I am.
It's coming.
At fever pitch.
It's coming. Frictionless kiosk, if you don't know what the hell that is, basically you tap your card, your credit card or your bank card, the gate opens, you walk in, you pick up a pint if it's pre-poured. Potentially you might pour your own, but I don't see that happening.
No.
Seriously, I don't see that happen. I think it's, at the moment, this is operating in King Power Stadium, and it looks, from the video I've seen, to be a pre-poured thing. Anyway, you pick it up, pick up a pie or whatever you want, and walk out. Simple as that. No interactions. Apparently, the average time through this kiosk is meant to be 15 seconds, which compares to currently, once you've waited how many bloody minutes you have to wait in a Villa Park concourse queue. Once you're being served, apparently it takes on average 48 seconds. So you're slashing half a minute off the average. So hopefully this will work. I know when Leicester tested it, it was actually at the Community Shield, Liverpool, Manchester City, and it was actually in the Liverpool end. That's the first time it was ever tested. And of course, Liverpool fans, let's say there was a few transgressions and they took liberties with it. And although didn't exactly make Leicester happy on the day, it gave them food for thought and how to improve and tighten up the system. But essentially, it's like Amazon Fresh stores. I think they're in London. Mainly, I haven't personally been in one myself, so fingers crossed that works, and it'll probably start to be rolled out, especially in the North Stand once that's built. And you'd imagine on the lower Trinity as well. But the problem is, it's costing £500,000 in the region off, so it's not a cheap exercise. But watch out for that. Villa Leicester, February next year, should be up and running. Also, the Safety Advisory Group has been consulted by Villa for, and this is like this local council that have to give green light these things, for rail seating, aka safe standing, as they used to call it, in the Upper Holt and Upper Doug Ellis. I still actually don't know the reasoning behind the Upper Doug Ellis. I mean, the Upper Holt is because of the persistent standing up there, you know, K4, K3, and they just see that as just a natural, you know, you put in the rail seat and everybody who brings the noise and stands there will be in almost like their natural element. And you can see the logic there. Going back a few years, they were looking at Lower Holt, the wings of the Lower Holt. And, I thought Lower Holt would be a good thing because you bring in atmosphere.
I'd have done the whole lot down there.
Yeah.
But
I think closer to the pitch.
But then you have to talk about migration of the people that actually bring the noise, which would be the Upper Holt. Would they want to move? So would they just stay where they are? And then there's still that persistent standing problem. So I can see why they're doing it up there. Upper Doug Ellis, I don't quite get that, but I'll find that one out, actually. I'll ask them.
Because most of the teams who I gather have done it, they've done it in lower tiers, haven't they?
Yeah.
So would we be probably one of the first if we did it? To do it in an upper tier, I'd have thought.
Meanwhile, across the Villaverse, Villa under 23s took a bit of a humbling 6-2 to West Brom.
Their feeder club.
Which does create that unfortunate narrative where they sell us their best prospects and then beat us anyway. well hammered
and
then
us we
this
ruined
time.
Them for them.
Yeah, so I mean, obviously, a lot of the under 23s have gone out on loan and various other excuses, but still not a good look. Meanwhile, a good result this, because I didn't actually expect in the Villa women's team they played in the Conti Cup. Don't ask me what that's all about. It's another group stage. I think it's just because the Women's Super League is quite small in terms of only 12 teams that they have a cup competition, which is actually like a league group stage thing just to kind of pad out the season a bit. It was expected that both Manchester United and Villa would rest a few players, which they did. But still, there were some, you know, your Lehmans, your Dailies were still playing. Good draw at the end with Daly scoring again. She reminds me of David Platt, that kind of impact where she's like a banker. You know she's going to score. It's like what Platt used to do. Fortunately, Platt scores penalties though. And Daly missed hers in that shootout, which they have a shootout. It's like a bonus point. It's a bit kind of American-esque. There's five teams in the league. I think they've also got Durham, Sheffield women as well. I think Everton as well, off the top of my head. And Manchester United. So 3 points for a win, 1 point for a draw. But if it's a draw, they have a penalty shootout. And if you win that penalty shootout, you get a bonus point. What do you think of that concept?
I mean, I kind of like the idea of a bonus point, but more like when you get in rugby, you know, if you score by a certain margin or if you score X amount of goals. I kind of like that because it sort of...
Well, cricket do it also,
yeah,
don't they?
It contributes... achieving more in the game, should we say? Because you won on penalties. Shouldn't it be like you won on the last resort? It's kind of, why do you get a bonus point for winning on penalties as opposed to 90 minutes?
Let me rephrase this question. Would you have liked to have seen a penalty shootout after the 0-0 against Leeds for a bonus point?
I don't think anyone was deserving of a bonus point, but we'll take what we can get.
I would. Although, how many shots did we have? I don't fancy
19?
I don't fancy our chances in the penalty shootout.
So that their goalie was crap.
Anyway, so Villa won the penalty shootout 4-3. Their Kiwi keeper, new signing Anna Leet, saved four penalties. So a good start for her. Right, Manchester United Cup tickets will be on sale by the time you listen to this to members. Potential for a few of them to be on sale, general sale. So if that's your status and you want to go, keep your eyeballs on that and you may have a chance because I don't know how many, 5,000 have sold out of the 7,500?
Something like that, yeah.
Because there's a couple of blocks left, isn't there? And there's about at least 1,000 a block. And meanwhile, as we said in Something for the Weekend, Chris attended the Trust AGM with Christian Perslow, who did a Q&A. I think you were invited by a mutual friend. But if you want to listen to what was said there, just listen to the previous show, the Something for the Weekend show that should be listed before this one. All right. One interesting thing before this, before the Leeds game was, I couldn't quite believe it when I saw it. Chris, you sent me actually pictures of Conservative MPs playing at Villa Park. You know, that's one thing. But the fact that several Aston Villa fans, families, had pre-booked Villa Park stadium tours only to get to the stadium to say, oh, sorry, yeah, you can't do it because...
The MPs are playing the lobby.
The MPs are playing the lobby, which is kind of like press. So see you later. Now, we all know how great Aston Villa are at communicating things.
And they do love a PR own goal.
Yeah, I mean, we can debate letting the government play on the pitch after, I think it's the worst opinion polls currently, or the biggest lead there's been for ages, and not the most popular visitors to Villa Park.
No, I mean, you kind of, when you go into the broader context, you do unfortunately kind of get it, though, don't you, when Villa are trying to get as much support at government level for their redevelopment and especially the redevelopment of Witten Station, which, as Perslow has said himself, Villa won't break ground until they've got assurances of infrastructure.
Yeah. Also, Villa Park needs to be A, in the Euros bid, the UK and I don't know if it's UK and Ireland's Euros bid, and also they need to win the Euros bid. And that's a government. When I put up this news and the pictures of this game taking place, people are saying, oh, well, local council decided. It's got nothing to do with like national politicians. And it's like, there's a bigger picture here. There's a lot of things have to happen for that North Stand to be built. It's not just three or four crusty Labour councillors sitting around a table signing off on it and going, oh yeah, good luck, go ahead. As we just said, that Euros bid must be won.
And you've got to get additional financing for it.
Villa Park at the moment cannot host the Euros game as it is. It falls down on a few things. So it needs that revamp to be a top-notch stadium. And then the train situation is something that's not, you know, just local, couple of local councillors doing it. There's a big picture here. And, you know, we've spoken about this in that newsletter and on the podcast all the time. So it's not just as simple as some people kind of point out. So, yeah, so this was, you know, it's, as you said, Persley was saying he was at Downing Street. Is that what you said?
Yeah, he'd been down at Downing Street, I think, on the Thursday night. So it was obviously a bit of a... Let's be honest, the whole thing just stinks of it. It's a bit of a sweetener, isn't it?
Yeah, it's more than a coincidence. So it's all part of the you know, the bigger picture. So it's like, I mean, if you're not a Tory, then, you know, you'd class it as getting in bed with the devil to, it's a Faustian pact to get the North Stand.
But it's maybe a necessary evil.
Because the narrative at the moment of, yeah, we're having a new North Stand, yippee. It's not that simple.
Soon, we're not.
There's so much things, a macroeconomic situation.
Contractors, getting someone to actually build the fucking things. Getting someone to actually commit to building a macroeconomic
situation where, you know, major contractors aren't actually quoting for jobs now because they don't want to be out of pocket if costs go up further. And, you know, we have to use, there's only three cranes in the whole of Europe that can actually lift the roof on the top. There's all these permutations. It's also potentially the most expensive time to have such a infrastructure built as a, you know, as a stadium. Right, it's time for hopefully a swifter Media Muppets to last week, because last week we did a 15-minute version. We digressed off talking about Southgate, which I edited out the main show, but if you remember, I put it up as a, there was a outtake show of just under 20 minutes of stuff that I took out. So if you remember, you can listen to that. If you're not, then jolly well sign up and be a member. So are we going for a short Media Muppets this week, Mr. Phil Shaw?
Yes, we are.
Right, let's run the theme tune. Right, what's in the shortened Media Muppets trough this week, then?
Well, we're back to the battery hens of the Birmingham Mail. We put out this timely piece just before the Leeds game with the headline, "The Number One Thing, Ollie Watkins Addresses Aston Villa Form with a Goal Vow." So with a headline like that, you're thinking Watkins' number one thing has to be scoring goals.
Ollie Watkins Addresses Aston Villa Form with a Goal Vow. It's a bit of a strange headline, but anyway, carry on.
You'd think it has to be him scoring goals, but
yeah, no. Yeah, be a few quotes about him saying, yeah, I must score more goals, been underperforming this season, blah, blah, blah. Oh,
you'd think that, but you'd be wrong again. The Birmingham Mail just has this way of making it, just making up headlines. It's a piece from an interview he did with Villa TV. The actual words he had were, "I feel like I've been playing well. The number one thing is always working hard when I go on the pitch." So he makes no goal vow, which is maybe a good thing after the Leeds game. But he says... He
doesn't trust himself, does he? No, so he's not making any goal vows.
No, and he really doesn't trust himself as you go on. He just says, if I'm not scoring what I am bringing to the team, so if I'm not scoring, I just need to put myself about and make sure that everyone can see that I'm working hard and doing my best. So, come on, Ollie, I want to show you a bit more confidence from you there. It's not he's not selling himself, but the headlines aren't getting any more truthful. What's next? Well, I did find another one. It's Juventus and Napoli cannot match what Aston Villa have done this season, but I'll save you a click. It's just their average attendances, so there's no need to go near that one.
It's material just for clicks. That's all it is. It's for advertising clicks. It's not. It doesn't need to exist, and you know, we all know that, but people still fall for this. You know, they're like, it's like cattle or lemmings just falling off the edge of a cliff.
Throwing themselves.
I thought you might get our favourite Jack Grealish Stan, who is still training away and churning out, is it daily or weekly Jack Grealish stories?
Hourly.
Hourly, yes. No, exactly that. Right, on to the 3 points. Unfortunate scenes in Indonesia, point number one. At least this time of recording this, 125 people have died in a crush in an Indonesian football match that... this is potentially one of the worst. I think it's second to 320 people that were killed and there was about 1,000 injured as well during a stampede at a Peru-Argentinian Olympic qualifier in Lima back in 1964. I think that's the, in terms of death toll, that's number one in terms of the tally. So this is a number two. Well, you just need to be over 100, I think, for that. It all kicked off when Arima FC lost 3-2 to rivals Persebaya Surabaya in East Java. It's like the first time they've lost for 23 games or something. They're not used to losing. I don't know the exact context of the game, but I do know that they sold over like 4,000 over the tickets, over the capacity, which is a potential recipe for disaster. But then you see some of the scenes. There's like police vans upside down. There's tear gas. It's a kind of carnage. It got completely nasty, and that is why Villa and Leeds players were wearing black armbands for the game on Sunday. Point number two comes from The Guardian, that has got an internal document that shows clubs have been taking a cut of money their own fans lose with the bookmaker Skybet. The document states clubs were entitled to a share of the losses from accounts registered to the club name via the club name to Skybet through their affiliate partnership. I mean, essentially how this works is when you sign up to a betting company through an affiliate link, so Skybet in this case, you would earn money on the losses of people that sign up. The EFL, for example, have said this arrangement, which has lasted 6 years, was scrapped at the start of the 2019-20 season, but admitted some clubs were still receiving funds under legacy contracts and would continue cashing in until the end of the 23-24 season. Now they're trying to get the Premier League clubs to admit whether they are actually cashing in on fans losing money through signing up to betting companies like Skybet.
I think it's the optics of, you know, clubs profiting from their own fans, like losses.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. I just assume they took upfront sponsorship money and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
Point number three. This one's almost like written for Villa. European clubs now are paying a record high price for injuries to their top players. Last season, according to a report by international insurance brokers Howden, they calculated injury costs by multiplying the cost per day of a player using base salary data from Sporting Intelligence by the number of days they were unable to play due to injury. The Premier League had the highest injury cost count of any of the top five divisions at 184.57 million, with La Liga in Spain a distant second on 109.34 million. Injuries in the Premier League were up 1,231 in 21-22 season compared to 938 the season before. I mean, obviously they're going to be the highest injury cost because of the wages. And, you know, you take the average wage probably across all the Premier League clubs, it's going to be a lot higher than any of the other leagues. So not really a big headline there. Probably the most interesting thing, but there was quite a sizable percentage difference in terms of injuries compared to, I think the season before that was the closed door season, wasn't it?
Yep.
But that injury cost, I think 75% of that is Aston Villa defenders, isn't it?
It's just our back four, yeah.
Right, before we go on with the show, I just want to give a big shout out to the My Old Man Said members. And a thank you to all those who joined us for Match Club for the Leeds game. And we will see you also for the Forest game as well. We have live virtual meetups for the away games if we're not at them. So we can all gather round virtually and exchange our angst throughout the 90 minutes, and we also, you know, it's like a live podcast before, at halftime, and after the game as well, essentially. As well as having access to those, of course, you have access to the the Match Club server as well, which is a 24/7 kind of meetup affair. You get access to extra shows. There's a few of those coming in the next few days, and ad-free versions of the podcast as well. A big thank you to Mr. Dan Morrison, who signed up over the weekend. I can't remember if I said thanks to Stuart Heggs. I probably did, but I'll say thank you again. Also, if you do sign up annually, you do save 10%, which is just over a month's free as well. And also new is the subscription runs from the day you subscribe. And it's monthly after that. Before, you would get billed at the start of every month. So, for example, if you signed up in the middle of a month, then you would be billed like 2 weeks later at the start of the next month. Now, patrons finally seen sense, and so they're doing monthly subscriptions. Everybody's got like different dates. It's basically whenever you the day you sign up. So please do go to myomansaid.com, click on the members link for more details.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
That's fair. So, you've got Chris Budd, Phil Shaw, 5 minutes to talk about this Leeds game.
Brilliant.
I'm sure we'll waffle on for longer, but...
call it 10.
12. The context of this game, this was opportunity knocks. I mean, yes, 0 points away from home this season. That needed to change. But as we've discussed in previous shows, if you look at the October lineup, there's big room of opportunity there. That means a full spectrum. It could still go tits up because individually there's reasons why we could lose every one of the games. But also, if we got our act together, you'd fancy we could get things out of it. One thing we were looking at is... Despite all these defensive injuries, would the improvement in the defensive organisation continue? Or, you know, was that just a couple of games blip? And would we be throwing away cheap points again? Obviously, Ludvig Augustinsson came in, so all eyes are on him. As if he was half decent, then this could be the answer with Matty Cash coming back in the right back position, potentially for the Forest game. Touch wood, he's back in training on Monday because Lucas Dean will be out for probably most of the games in October.
Yeah, you'd think it'll be a few more weeks.
Meanwhile, Leeds were unbeaten at home with 2 decent wins, especially the Chelsea 3-0. So it wasn't going to be easy. I think we predicted that it would be, let's say, a niggly, feisty...
low-scoring affair,
It's always feisty against Leeds.
It seems to be now. It didn't used to be. It is now.
Over the last few years, for sure. But also that it was... This wasn't going to be... Jesse Marsh has had more time now, so it's a bit of a different proposition because we were his first game last time, weren't we? So we caught him on the hop.
And Leeds were awful in that game, weren't they?
Yeah, before he had time to actually establish or do anything. So this was always going to be a bit more difficult. But at the same time, you went for the away win, and you know I wanted to go for that, but I remembered who I was supporting. But you were hoping you'd seen enough that Villa could actually grind something out of this, and they were close.
I mean, they should have done.
Yep.
Frankly, they should have ground it out. I didn't expect us to go there and go and win 3-0 again like the previous year, where I thought Leeds were just horrendously naive defensively.
Early doors, it was looking like there was going to be a red card in this game.
Oh, yeah, big time, all for the first half.
And all money was on Ludvig Augustinsson.
When he got booked in the first 5 minutes or so, you thought, oh, no.
I mean, he was either going to score the winner in this game or he was going to get sent off. That was, but none of the above.
He didn't actually last 90 minutes, but that's a different matter.
None of the above. He went his own route. He found another way to do a Villa.
And that's what you've got to do in these games. You've got to find a way.
He found a way to...
by hook or by crook.
Big opportunity for him. He'd been on the sidelines, came on, you know, on loan. Here's his chance. Dean's out for, he's probably the best part of a month. And he thought, well, I quite like Dean. I'm going to join him in the treatment room.
Yeah, he's thinking, I'm going to miss my mates over the next few weeks. There's going to be really good bants in on the treatment table.
Yeah, this twang.
In the defensive treatment room. They've got their own branch now.
They've got a nice little outbuilding at the other side of the complex.
It's a shame for him because in his brief time...
He was doing
time,
all right.
Yeah, he was doing all right. Okay. Because he was like Dean, he played like him, but he was just like a 75% Dean. He wasn't just as gung-ho forward, and he is a bit taller. So he was, after that shaky first 6 minutes, he was fine. He grew into his role, didn't he?
Yeah. He got a few tackles in there, and you know, he broke them down a couple of times. And he thought, yeah, actually, he's okay. Oh, well.
See you next year.
No, you won't see him next year. That's him gone, sorry. When they build a statue, they'll put 21 touches, 3 aerials, 1. That's what they'll say.
Went back to Spain.
Oh, dear. What was the highlights for you in the first half?
I would think my highlight was Villa being able to sort of like stand, give as good as they get as far as the...
They did. They showed some battling qualities and...
That was the main plus point straight away, wasn't it?
Kept their heads really throughout, yeah.
Because Leeds were like, ah, shit, this is similar kind of high-octane physical stuff to Bielsa. But we were matching it, but actually matching it in a 50-50 kind of way. It was like, can this team grind out? Can this team, is it up for the dirty, let's say, more nasty affairs? Which we've questioned them. When Young came in, we thought, ah, finally some, you know, shithouse, somebody who's got a bit about him. We know that Mings is up for the fight. But across the board, it was like respectable. It was like, yeah, we're actually toe-to-toe here. Not in a football sense,
It was a dreadful first half.
It was more the feisty kind of nastiness. And, you know, they picked up 3 yellow cards within the space of, less than 15 minutes, the back end of the first half.
Well, they were starting to get very frustrated very quickly. And then the fans just sort of got right after the ref straight away.
Yeah, and that's when you started to sense, actually, if there's going to be a red card, then this is starting to set up nicely. They're getting frustrated. They're picking up yellow cards. Villa are staying in this and actually creating the better opportunities.
We did have a few openings in the first half. For all of it being a bit of a shit first half of football, we actually had a few sort of half chances, no real big ones, but
Because was it half-time that we had five shots?
When we got on the ball, final third, we looked pretty likely to make something happen.
Yeah, half-time, I think it was 5 shots on target and they had 0.
Yeah, Watkins had 1 save, but Leeds' keeper, like you said, David, he is an annoying thing because he can't catch a cross. He flaps it all across.
He was looking a bit shaky, wasn't he?
He's just a shot stopper, isn't he?
Yeah, but when it comes to shot stopping, he gets lucky. He makes himself big.
He
does get lucky. Like, it comes off his shin, comes off of his calf, and it's usually with his legs, and it's just somehow either goes past the post or he does enough.
Bit of a De Gea type vibe to him.
But at sort of half time, you know, you're frustrated, but you sort of take it, knowing you were coming to Elland Road expecting a difficult game, and you kind of had one, but probably not in the manner you expected. I think once we got past that first 20 minutes, we kind of weathered it. You thought, yeah, we can grow into the game here, and did a little bit.
Yeah, let's address the main event was when Sinisterra got sent off, and then you're starting to rub your hands. But with Villa, I mean, this is mainly through Dean Smith's incapability of beating 10-men team. At that point, I was rubbing my hands thinking, I don't think we're going to lose this now. Normally when you go down, a team goes to 10 men and there's pretty much a whole half to play, you're thinking, right, we're going to win this now. But that wasn't my default position. I thought we should win this now, but I don't think we're going to lose it now.
And didn't really look like we were going to. You know, Leeds had maybe one or two little saunters into our box, but didn't do a lot. Very similar to Southampton, really. The only way we were going to lose that game is if we were our own worst enemy, which, as we know, we often are.
So my question, I mean, obviously we're in hindsight here. Do you think that, bearing in mind at this stage, and it's early doors in the second half, we're up a man. Do you think Gerrard was as proactive and, let's say, ruthless enough in his substitutions in terms of going for it than he should have been? Because the first substitution was the obligatory, you know, 60-minute mark-ish Buendia comes on, and he came on for Bailey. And then nothing else apart from 7 minutes to go, he put on Ings instead of Ramsey.
Yeah.
The first one, I think, okay, fair enough. But I'm thinking that Ings or Archer should be coming on 20 minutes to go at the latest.
Yeah, I mean, Buendia came on and did give us his usual impetus. I thought he did really well. It was good to see him and Coutinho actually getting space to play in and making things happen. And you're thinking, I wonder if Gerrard thought, I'll bring Buendia on, I'll get a bit of sort of energy into the team, a little bit more dynamism in and around the penalty area, and we should get the first goal. If we do, I think we would have potentially run through them, because I think as soon as Leeds would have had to open up any more, it would have given the likes of you know, the two of them space, Watkins run to run in, the space to run into, etc., Ramsey, all these kind of guys who want to run into the box.
But then you get into the 70th, 75th,
and then you're almost
mark.
Starting to chase the game, and then the goalposts change slightly in terms of how you've got to play it. Leeds are dropping deeper and deeper and defending reasonably resolutely, you have to say.
But I was thinking that there was a couple of times where we had a chance, and this is where I'm thinking there should have been another striker on earlier on. I can't remember if it was a Watkins header or something, where the keeper saves it, but he's parrying it out, and he's parrying it out into free space where potentially a second striker could have been hovering. And that was my only thing, because they were defending tight and blocking off that middle, and we had players trying to play through the middle, but
as we do, I was just thinking
I think we needed a second stream. We can roll a dice, they're a man down, we can put a second striker on and go for it, but I just think you bring in Ings on with 7 minutes to go, I don't think that's
it's a bit desperate by that point. I mean, your biggest chance obviously is that, you know, a really, really good Bailey cross, Coutinho hits the post with a great effort, and then Watkins sort of fluffs his lines from close range, probably either wasn't anticipating it or what, I don't know, but you think with that chance Ings buries that.
Yeah, I mean, this is another caveat by saying, you know, Ings and, let's say, Archer, natural goal scorers. I would use that term on them above Watkins. So
Watkins' all-round game, as we've said numerous times, we really like.
Yeah, we are talking about natural goal scorers. If you get that one chance, which is probably the only way this game's going to swing, I would have those on the pitch, or one of them at least, earlier. I mean, I think 70 minutes, even, you know, with hindsight, forget hindsight, 70 minutes, I would have been bringing on another striker.
Especially when, for example, if you brought Ings on with 20 to go and you score with 10 to go, you can then potentially just hook Watkins and bring in like a Dendonka and just shore up the middle and go, actually, we're going to control the game here and we'll hit him on the break.
The main point is we have to score a goal. I mean, regardless of what happens after, it's the how is the best way to do that. And I think he just waited to... He almost played it too cool.
He thought we were going to, of course, we'll get a chance, we'll take it. I've got Buendia, I've got Coutinho, etc. And to be fair, we did make chances. Was it 19 shots in the end? We should have buried one of them.
Yeah.
We did more than enough.
Chris is right. This might sound like a defensive Gerrard, but did he need to change it whenever the chances were coming? Maybe one big chance every 5 minutes and they just weren't being taken. I mean, there's one. The one that I think of is Konsa from a corner. I mean, the keeper come out, fluffed it again. Konsa's, 2 yards out and heads it wide. And it doesn't get spoke of as much as the three, maybe four that Watkins should have done better with.
Well, what's starting to frustrate me is these midweek training videos of Coutinho bending it into the top-hand corner and, you know, other players scoring from outside the 18-yard box. And how many attempts did they have outside the 18-yard box? And Coutinho pretty much had a similar shot in the similar position to the training video that was out midweek. I don't give a fuck what happens in training in terms of trying to get engagement with...
Can we caveat that as well? In any of those videos, is there a defender throwing themselves at the ball?
No.
I think not.
It's frustrating. And, you know, I think I put out on Facebook, I said, can these forwards earn their wages? And what I meant by that is, can you score? It's like, somebody said, it's a bit harsh on Buendia. And I said, well, no, the emphasis of the message is, please, one of you, and you know, 20 minutes to go, whatever, please, one of you earn your wages and score. Because only two teams have scored less this season than Aston Villa, West Ham and Wolves.
Which is criminal when you look at our firepower and look at the teams that we've played against.
How much money we've spent on these players, your Coutinhos, your Buendias, your Ings, your Watkins, and we've scored 6 goals in 8 games. Hats off the defence, even though pretty much the 80% of the starting lineup of our defensive unit, 4 out of 5, if you include Kamara, are out. And now even Augustinsson's out as well. And, you know, that was a huge positive. It's 2 clean sheets on the trot.
And Bednarak came in. I thought his distribution was first rate. I think he stepped into midfield really well in that sort of game when you need probably one of your centre-backs to break their press slightly. I thought he did really well.
But so that side of the thing is like, even though it's looking a bit dodgy with the injuries, it's like, no, actually, they're organised, they're doing well. So it's not as, but it also by the amount of shots we had and the chances we had, this is not a case of we're kind of overcompensating defensively, so we're not getting as many, shots and chances because, you know, we've been through periods under Lambert where you're not having shots on target, you're not even having a corner in a game. This wasn't the case here. We were creating, it was just rubber the green. Players really not living up to their reputations in terms of their finishing. I mean, you could do a YouTube highlight video of one-on-ones involving Ollie Watkins and the keeper saving them every time.
Yeah. It's decision-making because Watkins does well to get into these positions because sometimes it's not as if he's been put clean through all the time. He is having to beat a player here, beat a player there, get his way through. And then when he gets one-on-one with the keeper, it's almost like, well, I've earned this, now I'm going to have the shot. But he's just not making the right call. I mean, ones he's trying to square ones that he should be shooting, and he's shooting at ones that he should be squaring. It's not working for him at the minute.
Yeah, some of them, the credit has to go to the keeper, 100%. But also there's an element, he's not getting the rubber, the green. But then there is an element of the decision-making. There's probably another option here or there in terms of the timing of the shot and where he places it. So it's a bit of a mix, but it's getting to Trezeguet versus Brighton kind of territory now.
Yeah, I mean, I just wonder, the change you're talking about bringing Ings on, you would have had to leave Watkins on as well because Watkins is the number one striker at the minute. You don't want his confidence to go any lower by hooking him for Ings, even, you know, it might have been the obvious option. He would have had to go out left.
Yeah, but I'm thinking we needed 2 strikers on there, but just because of that, you know, there was a license to do it because they were down to 10 men.
You can almost play 3-5-2 in that situation.
I mean, you bring Ings on, 7-8 minutes to go, he had 1 touch of the ball. It's like, it's too little too late. And the longer you leave it, you know, as you saw with Fulham and Newcastle, Fulham go down to 10 men, 4 minutes. It's like, all they need is one bit of negativity, i.e. a Newcastle goal, and then they start to crumble because they know it's going to be a long day. Now, second half, sending off that Leeds got, it's like, the time to get them was in that first 15 minutes or so after that red card, because every 10 minutes that goes past, their resolve stiffens. And so the earlier you can bring on the striker, the better, because by the time Ings came on, they were like, you know, they could see the finishing line and they were fully focused.
Yeah, and the crowd got behind him. I think what happened was Leeds were already frustrated. The red came, and it was a red. It's a stupid bit of play by their lad. And then they kept piling into tackles more and more and more, picking up yellows, picking up fouls. And of course, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Oh, every time we tackle a Villa guy, they're going to go down. And it lifts the fans. And eventually, the atmosphere turns from frustration to, right, it's backs against the wall.
Galvanised.
It's a bit of siege mentality, which Leeds have at the best of times anyway. And all of a sudden, they're like, well, we ain't going to win this, so let's get out of this with a point. And then the fans really get behind the job in hand.
But they almost did win it because they had a chance at the death.
They had a couple of little chances.
Yeah,
Conza with a great tackle, actually.
Yeah, 23 fouls to our 12, actually. So that kind of shows you who was the bad guys in this encounter.
But apparently it was us, wasn't it, according to Jesse Marsh, for time wasting.
I know, I don't even know what he's talking about. We didn't even use our timeouts.
Yeah, Martinez didn't even feign injury either. But in terms of Villa being aggressive, we are now up there. I think Fulham and Manchester United have the most yellow cards, 23, and then it's Villa and Forest on 20 each. So the Villa-Forest game should be a bit of a knees up, to say the least.
Well, Villa have a tendency to give stupid yellows away, don't they, for like
the Augustinsson one?
Yeah, I mean, his one was just a badly timed tackle, but you're like Bailey and just like silly things. They're not like bad tackles or like, you know, Ashley Young has a tendency, he'll foul. So if he needs to foul him, he'll foul him. It's a bit like a Man City type foul. We don't do that enough. You think sometimes you just have to take the yellow for the good of the team. Villa are always more likely to just gift you a silly one, put themselves under pressure needlessly.
Well, I mean, Bailey did that. He was kind of took one for the team, but he got substituted straight off anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, anybody who got a yellow card in our team was off within, you know, they didn't stay around.
I would say we've been talking about McGinn probably in every podcast, and he had a good game. That was the kind of game that suited him.
It's combative, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Probably didn't have to be as controlling on the ball, so he just managed to sort of go and battle and scrap him.
Yeah, and he had a last-ditch block as well at the end, which was a great tackle from him. So,
Coutinho, would you be starting him against Forest?
He had a decent game. He is an option. I mean, the narrative, of course, is he's Gerrard's boy, so everybody hates Gerrard, so everybody has to by default hate Coutinho then, but he came the closest to scoring. That was a great volley off the
corner. You haven't answered the question. Would you be starting him against Forest?
I would start him with Buendia.
Ooh. Who's the full guy?
For broke.
Ramsey.
Ooh.
Ramsey always plays well when he comes off the bench, doesn't he, to be fair? As they both do, to be fair.
They all do. They all
off the bench, yeah. Yeah. Put more on the bench.
That's why I'm pissed off that Gerrard didn't bring the subs on earlier. That's they only play well off the bench. But you know, hats off to the likes of Mings again, Konsa, Young also had another good game. I mean, he's up for this kind of. You never used to think about him as somebody who relishes the fight.
I think he loves, because of his Man United past, he goes to a lot of places and they all hate him now, and he loves it. He loves playing the pantomime villain.
That season he spent in Italy learning the dark arts as well.
Good lad.
But yeah, he's been a revelation, Young. It was quite funny when the underwhelming reaction when we signed him again, as you know, most people said goodbye to him that because he wasn't on the squad list or he was on the release list. But what they didn't realise was anybody whose contract was up on that June date was always automatically put on the release list. They were always going to get him back if he was fit enough. And he's kind of been a revelation in terms of zero fee. So bang for buck, probably the best player this season in terms of bang for buck.
Oh, it's well, you look at it in comparison to the last, 5-10 years, some of the garbage we've bought for good money.
Yeah.
Brilliant bit of business.
So what we still need to see the upside from these forward guys. We need to see either Buendia grab the situation. He's going to have to do something special, I think, to break in to be a regular starter here.
He's going to have to come off the bench and win a game, basically.
Yeah, earn the right and then do it for a couple of other games to really embed himself and hopefully force a formation. Yeah,
he did it against Everton. He came on, won the game, he got the start in the next game, didn't work out for him. Yeah. So he already does, he needs to do it more than one game in a row.
Three big games ahead, you know, Forest away, you've got to be looking to win that. I think I've spoken about it a few times. Chelsea at home, Chelsea aren't at their best at the moment. That's got to be seen as a big opportunity to take a scalp. And then you've got Brentford at home, who are sort of in and around where you're going to be.
Just one final thing. Coutinho, Chris, you said in that audience with Purslow that he mentioned Coutinho, which if you could elaborate on that, because that was a bit bizarre.
So Purslow would acknowledge that clearly his form hasn't been there, and he acknowledged that Coutinho has acknowledged his form's not there as well, which I suppose when you're 29-30 you should be in a position to evaluate your own performance. But I think he's aware, he's frustrated that they maybe haven't got the sort of box office match winner that they thought they were getting, which is a bit like we said that from day one. You aren't going to get him.
The one that Barcelona fans were calling a fraud.
That one. and the one that hasn't played a lot of football previously, you know, the previous sort of 2 years. You're going to get flashes from him, of course you are, but in terms of, you know, consistent match-winning player week in, week out, we've not seen it.
Yeah, I just hope he isn't a red herring that distracts us from actually building a proper team with players that are consistent and actually doing the do. Because this was a game that you needed somebody like Coutinho to dig it out and just, you know,
he very nearly did.
Hit it from 25 yards, bing, bang, bosh, thanks for the 3 points, see you later. And he's going to have to do that to actually, earn his right to be in the starting lineup, but to actually contribute and to be seen as a good piece of business, or else it is a Fugazi signing.
I mean, you could argue if the bar's set that low that he managed to get through 90 minutes, that in itself is a bit of a breakthrough at the moment.
Right. We'll now have to wait a little longer for the next game, because as we seem to all the time with Villa nowadays, Forest is a Monday night. Be interested to see how the bookies have that one, because they had some of them had 3-1 outsiders for this game. So not much in the outside neutral world fancy Villa I mean, we saw, I mean, we're three unbeaten now. I think if you win, just final point, if you win against Forest, then that unbeaten run actually becomes an unbeaten run, if you know what I mean.
Dare we say tangible progress?
Well, not progress in any sense of the real word, apart from the context of this season, but I would say turning the ship in the right direction.
Which Gerrard said after this game, which I don't agree with. He said, "Oh, you know, I think we've turned a corner." I'm like, "Well, let's wait and see."
Well, it's the old cliche. It's like if you miss out on winning an away game, but unfortunately we've got another away game to go. But let's say slightly easier than Leeds. Then that point against Leeds actually becomes a bit more substantial if you win the next game against Forest.
Mm-hmm.
Because then it contributes to a four-game unbeaten run. And then you're actually looking at that as a four-game unbeaten run when you play Chelsea. You can actually say it out loud.
Yep.
So,
and then you're going into two games. The run becomes a really big opportunity then.
Yeah, well, it's a small matter of Chelsea. I mean, then if you get something out of Chelsea and remain unbeaten, then you can start saying that you've turned it around. Gerrard can actually say that aloud and we won't kind of scoff at it. Right, it just leaves me one thing to say. If you haven't subscribed already, AstonVilla.wtf. Do it. Don't be a fool. Don't be left out on the sidelines. Get real insights. Also, please do follow us. If you listen to the show on Spotify or Apple or whatever glorious podcast app you listen to, please do follow. So you get notifications when the show pops. So you'll be the first to hear it. If you can, do join us as a member and we'll make it worthwhile. Join our inner circle. My old man said members offering each other mortgage advice the other days. This is how the inner circle works. Many, many levels to it.
Who needs Martin Lewis when you got mums?
Exactly. Exactly. Indeed. Right. We're off to record a bit of an after show. We will be discussing the cloud that all these people trying to get Gerrard out. This was a kind of a run-of-the-mill result where you shrug your shoulders, you go 0-0 against Leeds, yeah, whatever. But because of this whole pitchfork Gerrard out brigade, you know, which is obviously valid, it's an opinion, that seems to cloud the thinking on these individual games. I mean, you know, people were saying, oh, this is dross, boring, you know, crap. I say, it's kind of quite feisty. We had 19 shots. It's kind of a decent 0-0 as a spectacle, I would say. Red cards, bit of intrigue. So it's not...
But the broader narrative doesn't help.
Yeah. But this broader narrative is a bit damning. But we'll discuss that in the after show as a members only episode. So until next time, I think that will be something for the weekend. It's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.